a better way. You don't have to be another face in the crowd. Well, hi folks, this is Jack Spirko with the Survival Podcast. Welcome to an episode of Friday Flashbacks. After 15 years and hundreds of interview shows, we decided to run them as flashbacks every Friday, beginning with the oldest of them and going forward. There's a tremendous library of wisdom in all the great interviews we've done over the years, so sit back and enjoy. Whether this is your first time or even your second time around with today's episode, I'm sure you will enjoy it and learn a lot from it. And remember, you can help support the Survival Podcast and the work we do just by becoming a member of the Survival Podcast Members Support Brigade. If you do that, you'll get access to over 70 awesome discount codes on products and services you likely already use. Things like seeds, cannabis products, food storage items, custom roasted coffee, and even cool stuff like ammo and moonshine stills and more. So support the show, get all your money back and more. Just go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and click on members to learn more and sign up. Now let's get into today's Friday Flashback. And today we flash back to September the 8th, 2011. This was originally episode 740. It was titled Technology and Identity Security with Jim Miller. Just saying. All right, with that, I got all of that out of my system now, and I want to introduce our guest today. And as I said during the introduction segment, we're doing a first-ever show. I've never really done a show on information security, web security, protecting your identity online, and all that type of stuff, because I'm not an expert in it. I try to use the basic tools and basic common sense, but there's a lot of stuff going on out there that's really a risk. There's things that are outside of our control, like I got a letter one time from the Department of Veteran Affairs that said somebody stole a computer with my information on it, but I wasn't supposed to worry about it. And that's outside of what I can control. But there's a lot of things we can control, and most of us are online every day. So I was really excited when Jim Miller, who's on the line hanging on for us right now, who's a security analyst that specializes in securing companies in the financial sector, offered to do an interview with me. Jim ensures that controls are in place to prevent security breaches and protect information in his job. His areas of expertise include vulnerability management, intrusion detection, threat analysis, risk analysis, and he's a certified information security professional and a certified information systems auditor. So he's a really sharp guy. He also is a prepper and writes for Self-Reliance Illustrated magazine, Dave Canterbury's magazine, so he's familiar with this type of identity protection and the concerns of people that listen to the show. So, hey, Jim, thanks for joining us today on the Survival Podcast.
No problem. Glad to be here.
Hey, I just kind of want to really get right into it. I think a lot of people out there underestimate how big some of these threats are to their personal information. Can you talk about, just day-to-day, home networks and being online, what are some of the biggest threats to people's personal information out there today?
Providing too much information, when you think about it. Most people give information online without even thinking about it. You think about Facebook. Why would they need information like your address, phone number, all your friends, everything they like, bands, foods, restaurants, any type of business. There are even fields in there for including, relationships. Oh, this is my mother, this is my brother, stuff like that. So really not providing your information in the first place is probably the best thing you can do. Along those lines, passwords, that's the simplest thing you can do. Use complex passwords. So you want, a lot of characters, at least 8 characters, at least one uppercase, at least one lowercase, at least one number, at least one special character. Don't use the same passwords on every site. So if somebody compromises your Facebook account, they also have your online banking password. They shouldn't be guessable. Don't use family names, any hobbies, your house number, anything like that. It's really pretty common sense stuff.
What are your feelings? I use a password tool called RoboForm, which lets me use complex passwords and not have to remember anything. And, of course, it itself is password protected. Are you familiar with that type of technology? What are your thoughts on it?
That technology, yeah. I've used something similar in the past. The only problem with that is if they compromise your password for that tool itself, then they've got all your passwords.
Sure.
Putting all your eggs in one basket there.
Sure, but they have to get access to your machine to do that, so I think there's probably some other things we can do. I mean, what are some things we can do to protect our home networks and our you know, networks? I mean, almost everybody's on wireless today, and I know there's a lot of unsecured wireless networks out there, and people think just because they can't, you know, people think just because they can't get into their other computers through their network, I guess that maybe hackers can.
That's totally not true. Some of the basic things you want to do, you know, don't install software that you don't know of. You know, you might find something on the internet that says it does X, Y, and Z for you, but it also could have a Trojan horse installed where it's got a keylogger on it. So every password you put in there is going to capture your password and send it back to whoever wrote the malicious software. You should have a personal firewall, absolutely. Antivirus is a must. A lot of these commercial suites like McAfee and Symantec and some of that these days have everything kind of built into one with like antivirus, anti-spyware, personal firewalls. Get one of the big guys, and you really can't go wrong there. Like Kaspersky is another one. There are some free versions out there, but you kind of get what you pay for. But on that note, there is like custom malware out there. I mean, you can buy malicious software or malware that's guaranteed to not have a signature that to be undetected for like 30 days, for example. There's a lot of the malware for sale for malicious purposes.
It's also that stuff coming out of like, you know, Romania and,
Estonia. Like, yeah.
The Ukraine.
Countries.
Is it Ukrainian? I hate admitting that, but it's my family's old country is one of the biggest sources of stuff like that. Now, one of the big trends I've seen, I wonder if you could comment on this, is that these guys are developing a malware that makes it look like your computer's infected, and then the malware itself offers to scan your computer for you.
Yeah, it's
then
malware.
You say yes, and then it scans it for you and tells you have all these problems and says it fixed 5 of the 19 problems, and just enter your credit card number and it'll fix the rest. And, of course, if you do that, not only have you given the money, you've now given your credit card number to the people that wrote the malware in the first place.
Right, and any pop-up like that, you really have to watch what you click on, because some of those things will automatically install malicious software just by clicking on a link in one of those. That's scareware, though. It's running rampant in the wild right now.
And what do you mean by in the wild? That's probably something a lot of folks aren't sure what you mean by that.
Just kind of out, without using the term in the wild again, just out there on the internet, you know, everyday users clicking on things, you know, even corporate networks. Kind of not in a controlled environment, just out there spreading around the internet.
Now, years and years ago, I quickly snapped to a feeling that as far as browsers went, that you were better off with Firefox or Safari than Internet Explorer. And I've been anti-Internet Explorer for, you know, as long as Internet Explorer has been around now. I think they've made some upgrades, but are there some browser platforms that are just inherently more secure than others? I know you can still get malware and things like that through Firefox and other browsers, but is there really a security level difference at this point between the different browser platforms?
I personally use Firefox still at home. I'm just kind of an old school security guy. The new Internet Explorer 9, they're claiming is like the most secure browser out there. I have not personally used it yet, but Chrome, I've been using Chrome lately as well. That seems to be pretty good. The browser security is a lot better than it used to be, I'll put it that way. But another thing, actually, patching. A lot of people don't patch their machines. You need security patches out there. You know, Windows updates. Enable automatic Windows updates. Third-party software like Adobe and Java are really big ones. Those are probably two of the pieces of software out there that have the most vulnerabilities just because they're so targeted all the time. You know, hackers attack Adobe products because you think about it, almost every internet-facing PC in the world has some type of Adobe product out there.
Yeah, there was a big compromise issue with Flash as a whole a couple of years ago, wasn't there, going through the Flash plugins or something like that. I remember my network security guy had disabled Flash on every machine on the network, and I was ready to kill him over it.
Yeah.
Until I found out how serious the threat really was, and was like, well, you need to patch it and get it back on. But it was a legitimate, serious threat through the Flash. So that meant, like, you know, YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. As I said, yeah, Flash is another one of the big ones that people go after. They used to go after operating system, like Windows-level vulnerabilities more often, but they've gotten pretty good. Actually, Windows 7's a lot better on security than even XP or Vista was. So they're typically going after application level vulnerabilities at this point. But bottom line, don't run things you don't need to. If nothing on your computer is running or needs Java or Flash or anything like that, just don't run it, because the more things you have running on your computer, the more things they have to attack.
Sure, sure. And what are some of, like, the big, I mean, what's the big goal out there right now in the hacker community? Is it identity theft? Is it credit card numbers? Is it compromising your machine and get access to your accounts? Is it all of the above? Is there any kind of hierarchy there, or they're just vermin everywhere trying to do everything?
Well, here's kind of the way the hacking rolled out over the years. You know, first, hackers were initially just people that liked tinkering with computers and modifying them. And then there are people that tried to kind of see what they could get away with. Then the era of script kiddies or kids that just use hacker tools, you know, you think about a 15-year-old sitting in their parents' basement using hacker tools that they download for free off the internet, just hitting some poor company's IP addresses. And then lately, you know, you've heard about these hacks with Anonymous and Lulzsec. I don't know if you've picked up on any of these in the mainstream media.
Absolutely.
So that falls under hacktivism, people that are hacking because they're trying to do it for a cause. 2011 has been called the year of the hack. So there's the hacktivists going on right now, but then there's also things like the Russian Business Network. A lot of it is just for-profit information. Information security is so important, you know. Identity theft is like the fastest growing crime in America right now. And you can buy social security numbers for, I think, like a few dollars a piece, you know, in certain like Carter networks and stuff like that.
They have, like, auctions on people's credit card info. I saw that on, like, 2020 or something like that, where people bid on it, and they sell it to, like, 10 people at the same time. And then once the guys buy it, they're out there all trying to buy as much crap as they can, as fast as they can, before it gets shut down or runs out of limit.
Right. And there's one thing you can do kind of to help that. Some of the card companies now have, like, one-time cards you can use where you contact them somehow. I need to look into it more. But they give you like a one-time credit card that you can use just for that one transaction. So if that number gets compromised, it's not attached really to your card anymore. It's not going to affect you anymore.
So I guess it's like a revolving number, like it changes? Or
yeah.
That's kind of interesting. Yeah. I mean, my solution is don't use credit cards. But if you're using a bank credit card that's really a check card, it's the same vulnerability. They just, you know, they can get your money instead of charge it against your money. So that's a huge risk for everybody out there. I think there's on the identity theft side things, beyond prevention, what are your thoughts on services like LifeLock? Are they worth the money, or do you have any experience with those at all?
LifeLock really doesn't do anything, from what I've gathered, that you can't do yourself, as far as, you know, putting holds on your credit and don't let anybody open any cards in your name. So I don't know if I'd pay the money for LifeLock. You know, Xander Insurance has a product that's actually identity theft insurance, which might actually be better than the prevention products.
So instead of trying to prevent it, you try to prevent it, and they cover your ass if you fail.
Exactly. Yep.
I think Dave Ramsey recommends that.
That's where I found out about it originally.
Okay, cool. Cool. And, I mean, what are some other things that people can do? I mean, like, what about portable data? A lot of people carry around the USB sticks and stuff like that. Can you tell people maybe some ways to make the data they're carrying on that a little bit more safe?
One product comes to mind. Well, there's a lot of secure USB drives that are marketed out there. I've seen them with, you know, biometric authentication, so you need to match your thumbprint before you can open the drive. But, you know, that thing was like $1,500, $1,500. What I personally use is something called an iron key. And so John McCann did a write-up on his website recently about that. So essentially it's a USB drive that uses military grade encryption. You have to put in, you know, a long password for it. And if you put in the wrong password 10 times in a row, it completely wipes the drive. So it's kind of like actually a self-destructing feature.
So it just formats it basically, and all the information.
Exactly.
So don't forget your password if you want your information back. But if somebody gets their hands on it, you know it's still secure. And that brings me to another one that recently, I can't remember exactly who did this. I don't remember if it was Department of the Army or if it was a major bank, but they wanted to test security vulnerability. So they went and they put USB sticks out in their parking lot. They just tossed them out there like they were lost.
Yeah, that's called a road apple.
Yeah, and like 60% of the employees that found one took it inside, stuck it in their computer. Now, it didn't do anything except basically said, this guy's stupid, and he plugged it in. But they just wanted to test their own vulnerabilities. And, I mean, to me that means if you find anything like an MMC card or a drive or anything like that, don't go sticking it in a computer.
Exactly. I mean, they had digital picture frames, you know, that came from China that were infected when they rolled out of the factory before a few years ago. Those road apples, though, you think about it, you know, it's happened on federal government networks. You know, I was reading about one. You know, they just dropped some USB drives in the parking lot. And people want to see what's on it. So they plug it into confidential computers. You know, plugging it in then opens a back door and calls home to whatever nation state they were part of. And they now have a back door into that federal network.
I mean, and they're in. I mean, they're all the way in because at that point, that device is plugged in as a physical connection to that machine. The user's credentials are already entered to have the machine locked on.
Exactly.
I mean, it is absolute drive a truck through a hole in the network at that point.
Absolutely. I always, there's a saying I always use, there's no security patch for stupid. you know, you can have every technological control and have, you know, 10 firewalls and all your software up to date. But as soon as you get a user to click on something they shouldn't, you're in.
Yeah, I remember when the internet first started up and there were a lot of these viruses, things coming around that were like, you know, click on this and open it. And you just looked at it and went, I'm not opening that. And some people would. And I remember telling one of the people at our office one time, I could set up a tool, you know, a damaging virus. I could call it Disk Destroyer Executive, and these people would still open it. So I guess there are people that we can't help. But, I mean, the problem is we can be smart about the way we protect our home information, but we then work with these people, and our if it's like, you know, HR has all our information. So if we have a dumb person in our work environment, I guess where guys like you step in, and you have to spend all your time looking out for the people that don't have a stupid patch.
Exactly. I mean, RSA Security, okay, it's a big IT security company. This year, they had a targeted attack. So apparently, I believe it was a nation state, figured out who worked there based on it. I think they got the information from Facebook, sent them a targeted email, like a spear phishing email, with an attachment, an Excel spreadsheet that I think it had some type of macro setting in it. Anyway, they were able to get them to open the spreadsheet and then took control of their computers, and they were trying to get into RSA because they had information to help them get into a large defense contractor.
Yeah, and I mean, that's another thing. Like, if you get a spreadsheet from somebody that does that, and occasionally you get one from a trusted source where they've used for some type of, you know, to link formulas together or whatever, they've used macros. But if you get a spreadsheet from an unknown source that says, do you want to enable macros, that's probably a bad idea.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the more and more technological controls we come up with and put on the network, the more the bad guys are just going back to social engineering and the simple, the low-tech attacks of going after people.
Yeah, I mean, there's always the phishing ones that I don't understand how anybody falls for. You know, I'm a Nigerian prince, and I've got $45 million from my dad that I need to get out of Nigeria, and if you send me your bank account number, I'll wire it to you, and you can keep half of it or whatever. But there's stuff that's, you know, far more sophisticated. One I saw recently, I got an email from somebody. Actually, it looked like a message that came from eBay, and it said, you know, I don't understand why you gave me negative feedback. Please retract it. I'll leave negative feedback on you, triggering, you know, an angry response. So I'm thinking, I didn't sell anything or buy anything on eBay for the past 6 months. I don't know what this dude's talking about. And when I hovered over the link, you know, I could see that it was a redirect URL. And basically, they were trying to pass you through a frame, get you into eBay, and log in your eBay credentials.
Right. So if some of your listeners don't know, a phishing attack is, it's like an email, phishing with a PH. It's like an email that comes, say you're a customer of maybe U.S. Bank. So you get an email that says, there's a problem with your account. You know, please click here now and log into the U.S. Bank website to correct it. Just using them as an example, not picking on the big boys. And it'll take you to a website that looks exactly like the U.S. Bank website. Well, then you put in your ID and password to get in. Well, now they have your U.S. Bank ID and password, and they can use that to get to your money. So the things to look out for there is the phishing attacks tend to scare you or, you know, upset you and incite an immediate response. So you're not thinking clearly. So you go ahead and click and, you know, go ahead and enter your information trying to see what's wrong with it. And you've just given them the keys to the castle as far as your account goes.
And, I mean, they don't even worry about whether you're a U.S. Bank customer, because I get that one. I get the one for Sun Bank. I get the one for Bank of America. And I don't have accounts with any of those people. They just know if they send out 50 billion emails, a lot of the people will have accounts there.
Exactly. If they send an email to 5 million people and they get 1,000 people to click on it and enter their password, well, that didn't hardly cost them anything, and they just got access to, you know, 1,000 bank accounts.
You know, and I mean, my thing, though, is that a lot of people think about, you know, they think about the big stuff, the Social Security number, the credit card information, bank accounts, but there's a real effort to hack things like Facebook accounts, Google accounts, and things like that, because then I've got access to because you said, go low tech, focus on people. Now I've got access to your network of contacts. I can get all kinds of information if I pose as you.
Yeah, I mean, think about this. You know, you used to do marketing. Facebook and Google essentially come down to marketing companies. You know, they have, as I said, they know what bands you like, what restaurants you like, who your friends are. So you list somebody as your mother, your brother, your sister, any relationships you have there, phone numbers, addresses, anything like that. It's a marketer's dream. But that's exactly, I mean, information is the currency of, you know, the modern day. So you have to wonder, why is Facebook free still, right? Because they're making money off of your information. Google's jumped on board with Google Plus. They're doing the exact same thing.
Well, they're making a mint on it because, I mean, as a marketer myself, if I can put for the Survival Podcast, if I can advertise only to people that fit my primary demographic, that spend all their time looking at other sites about preparedness, my response rate's going to be much higher. So that's a legitimate use of the information that's voluntarily given, but then that information is stored and it's subjective and people can find it. And I think like 25 years ago, nobody would have wanted to put that much information out there about themselves in their public profile on anything. And today, people willingly give it because they just want to connect with other people that think the same way or listen to the same music. And it's like a blessing and a curse because we form these great communities, but then we also have this extreme vulnerability. Because I know too much about you. If I'm a malicious person with the knowledge I can get off a Facebook account, I can do a lot of damage.
Exactly. Absolutely.
So, I mean, do you have any advice for, like, parents? I get parents all the time, you know. My kid wants a Facebook account. All their friends have a Facebook account. You know, they're not in the group if they don't have one, too. And, you know, I don't want to step on their toes completely, but I also don't want, you know, I don't want to risk of a child predator. I don't want them giving away information about me that can be used in something like this. I don't want them doing something stupid that's going to come back to haunt them 10 years later, like posting pictures of themselves blasted drunk, and then they're running for Congress. I guess that really wouldn't affect anything anymore, but you know what I mean. So
sure.
How does a parent, you know, with that kid that's getting old enough for Facebook and still pretty young, try to protect their kid?
Add them as a friend. Monitor their activities online. Keep that computer in a public area of the house where you can monitor what they're doing. Because a lot of the predators that are out there are going after kids on Facebook.
Absolutely.
Actually, I know of a teenager who has two Facebook profiles, one that he's friends with his mom and one that he's not. And he does everything he doesn't want her to know about with the other one.
And that's really hard to police.
Exactly.
I guess if you have one that you're monitoring and there's never any activity on it and he's always on the computer, that could be a clue. I also heard something recently I'd like, you know, your thoughts on this issue. I was watching some on TV, and they were saying that parents should have their children's username and password to accounts like this, not so much so they can go behind them and look at everything that they're doing, you know, if they want to do a friend thing and see that, but should that kid disappear, having access to everything they were doing right up till that point happened is going to help investigators a lot with finding out where that kid is.
Well, the example I just said, I mean, it's the first thing to come to mind. So you have the ID and password for the one account, but what about the other email account or the other Facebook account that you don't know about, that's the one that they're communicating with the predators with? I don't think it would help that much.
Sure, sure.
I mean, a kid might not post pictures of themselves, you know, drunk if their parents are looking at their Facebook, but they might on the other one.
Yeah.
Another thing with that, a lot of employers these days are actually searching for people on Facebook and seeing what kind of person they are before they hire them. And a lot of people have not gotten jobs because of stuff they posted on Facebook. And check your privacy settings. Seriously, so many people have things set to public, and you can see things
everything
that strangers should not be able to see. Take them seriously. They change them all the time on Facebook. Take them seriously. Only let your friends see your information. And only accept friends you really know.
Yeah, I get a tremendous number of requests, and I accept very few of them. I try to, as a business, I would say that you're much better interacting with your marketplace through a fan page or something like that doesn't give away the personal information that a personal profile does.
Exactly. Like, I know of several people actually in this industry that have their own fan page, but their own private Facebook page.
Gotcha. What are some other threats that are out there, just things that maybe people haven't heard of or don't really think about?
Wireless. People plug in a wireless router and they think they're good. One guy did that in a story I read about recently, and next thing you know, his door was getting kicked in, and he had a SWAT team pointing guns at his head. What happened was somebody was using his wireless network and downloading inappropriate material of minors, and it got traced back to his IP address. Next thing you know, there was a warrant to come in and point guns at his head.
So that's an interesting thing, because it wasn't so much a vulnerability that someone could jump on his network, see the other devices on his network, and then steal information off his computer.
He just didn't.
You can handle that with a firewall even, but
yeah,
just the fact that they were able to use his network for something they obviously didn't want to use their own network for. And,
sure,
and that caused him issues.
There's something called war driving where hackers will drive around with the wireless laptop set in promiscuous mode and just jump on every wireless network they can, and they'll document. And there are websites out there where you can go find all the open wireless networks in your city and go jump on them and poke around their network if you want.
Yeah, there was like a trend one time in New York. I think they were doing it in Chicago too, where people were doing it with handheld devices. And
yeah,
every time they found a place you could get a signal, they were like spray painting an X on the sidewalk or something
like
that.
Yep. Another important thing is to encrypt your traffic. Use a WEP encryption. Well, that's better than nothing, but it can be broken pretty quickly with freely available hacker tools that you can pull down off the internet. Try and use WPA, or more importantly, WPA2. Turn off your Wi-Fi if it's not in use. Use a personal firewall. Keep your signal strength low so, people really far away can't pick up on your signal. You just need it around your house. You don't even need your neighbors to be able to jump on. Change the default passwords on your wireless router. You don't know how many people get hacked because they just have default passwords, and you can often tell what type of device is running. And, you can just Google the default password on that device, and next thing you know, you own that wireless network.
And passwords like password.
Exactly.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5 are not good passwords.
Exactly. It goes right back to the complex passwords I was talking about. You can filter wireless networks by MAC addresses. A MAC address is a media access control. It's a hardware level address for a device. So you can filter it so you can set it up, so only the MAC address of the machines that you own can jump on that network. Yes, MAC addresses can be spoofed, but by that time they're probably just going to move on to the next guy and not bother with that.
Well, because it's one more step. It's a lot like, having a padlock on your tool shed. Yeah, I can get a pair of bolt cutters and cut it, or I can get a crowbar and pry off the latch.
Exactly.
But if the guy next door's tool shed has got the door open,
exactly,
well, I'm going to go there, unless I know you've got something really valuable. So I guess the other thing is you have to assess what is your, we're all targets, but some people are higher level targets than others. Raytheon would be a much higher level target than Joe Blow's, inner tubes or
exactly,
what have you.
Exactly. Just, don't make yourself interesting. Don't publish your SSID. Just do everything you can to keep them from getting on. I personally don't even run wireless at home. My wife asked me to, and I said I'm not going to do it until I can take the time to set it up correctly. And, 4 years later, that still hasn't happened. Because I'm a paranoid security guy by nature.
Well, yeah, you guys are always a little hyper-reactive, but the more
absolutely,
I learn, the more I understand. And cables work really good, and they're a lot harder to get through than a wireless router. But to me, anytime we're connected to the internet, we're vulnerable. And that brings me to another subject people don't think about. What are your thoughts on wireless devices like iPhones and iPads and all, and Androids and all? Are there vulnerabilities there that people maybe don't think about, other than just the regular internet usage vulnerabilities?
There's an increase in malware that's written for handheld devices. That's probably the biggest thing now. Apple products typically didn't have to worry about it too much, but there's, even this year, there's been a big uptick in Apple-related malware, whether or not Apple will admit that or not. But as, you know, they're growing in market share, they're just going to be a bigger and bigger target. You're still somewhat safe with, you know, Linux or Unix-based stuff. I personally have an Android, but I run antivirus on it.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you would think that you would have some level of protection on, like, an iPad or iPhone, because, at least on the applications, because they'll have to go through an approval process, but I don't know who's doing that approval process and how rigorous it really is, because it seems to me, if you could get malware into an app and a couple million apps before you activate it, I think that was another thing people need to understand. You can have a real problem without knowing it for a long time, because a lot of these guys that do this stuff, especially like a denial of service attack or whatever, they wait until they have enough penetration before they even make their presence known.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't ever run Wi-Fi on my phone. That's just an easier way to attack. I just run everything through the 3G.
And that's got some of its own levels of security and all that are taken care of by the provider then.
Yeah. Now, I work in a downtown urban environment, so I could be walking down the street and there could be people trying to get into my phone. I'd never know it.
Gotcha. And I guess another thing people need to think about is just, you know, basic common sense when you're on a phone. I mean, I've heard conversations in public that you just think, does this guy realize he's sitting on a train, surrounded by 20 other people?
Yeah.
I've heard people give out account numbers, social security numbers, just walking around on their phone, especially once they put those earbuds in and it kind of tunes them out to what's around them.
Yep. Absolutely. I see stuff like that all the time downtown. You walk by, an open cafe or something. You walk by somebody, it's called shoulder surfing. You just walk by and they've got all this, like, account information and, research and development information for their company. And they're sitting here at Starbucks working on this, not thinking that somebody's looking over their shoulder at what's up on their screen.
Wow. Well, that's a level of, and that's where you guys get real hyper freaked out about things, and people like me that don't do stuff like that wonder why you're always on edge, and it looks like I had six cups of coffee this morning already.
Yeah, we're paranoid by nature, but I mean, it's kind of my job is to look at everything as a threat and determine the appropriate level of controls to make sure that we're not affected by it.
Is there any particular malware or virus or anything that's kind of running around out there right now that's doing some real damage that's kind of on you guys' radar?
Nothing really specifically. There's just so much malware out there, and they're writing, like polymorphic viruses that they change all the time. So pretty much every time they infect something, they'll change. So they're just slightly different, so they won't be picked up by antivirus software. One thing to note is, a lot of the security tools are the same tools that the hackers use and vice versa. So, I've used a website called VirusTotal before. So if you find an infected file or a file you think is infected, you can upload it to that website and it'll run through the top 20 antivirus vendors and tell you if they have signatures for that. Well, the guys writing the viruses can submit it there too. So they can tell right away whether or not their virus is going to get picked up.
Got you. So they'll actually submit their own file to see if anybody knows.
Yep.
That way they can kind of police the longevity of what they're doing, and they know when to make their changes.
Sure. And this malicious software for hire, I mean, they'll guarantee certain cyber criminals out there, they'll guarantee that you won't be picked up for 30 days or whatever. And they offer support contracts for some of their malicious software. I'm serious.
You got a warranty and a support contract for criminal software from a criminal, and the damnedest thing is they probably honor it.
But you think about these countries that produce a lot of this stuff. Okay, you've got a lot of really bright people that are really smart about this topic, and no jobs for them. So
no job.
If somebody offers them a steady job writing, you know, malicious software and you're a developer, you don't care as long as you're feeding your family, right?
Especially when you know that most of your victims are sitting over in either Western Europe or North America, and you feel like that's them, the hell with them. And I, you know, I got to make my, my ruples or whatever. So yeah, I mean, there's just a tremendous amount of stuff out there. Is there like any websites that you monitor, or provide a kind of ongoing update information that would be good for people to use as resources, or just general, like, protect yourself websites that you can trust the advice on them?
US CERT has a lot of good information that might be a little technical for most people that aren't in the field. The City of Seattle website, actually, if you go to seattle.gov and click on departments and information technology, there's an information security section. And they actually do a really good job informing their citizens about, you know, scams that are out there, viruses that are out there right now, stuff like that. So, yeah, there's an unsolicited endorsement for that website. It's just a good example. I can try and find you some links to put in the show notes as well.
That would be great if you could do that. I think the big thing people need to remember is that there's just certain things that your bank or Google or Facebook or eBay will never ask you for. They're never going to ask you to click on a link to log in. They figure you know how to get to Google or you know how to get to eBay because you already have an account there. And I think that's the biggest thing is if you ever see an email that says there's anything wrong or anything needs to be updated or any survey they want you to take or anything like that, and it says click a link to go there, if you really just have to know if it's legitimate, go there directly versus through the link and log into your account. And if they really want something from you, they'll tell you when you log in.
Either type the URL in yourself or call the number at the bottom of your statement or on the back of your card. Don't use the number because they've set up fake call centers before, too, for these scams.
Sure.
So you think you're calling this bank and you're calling somebody and God knows where. The accents tip them off a lot of times.
Yeah. This is Peggy. My commercial. With the Russian guy, you know, I can't remember who it is, some credit card company, and it's a big fat Russian dude out in the middle of the snow, and he's like,
exactly,
you know, this is Prime Credit, and this is Peggy, how may I help you?
Exactly. That's not too far from the truth.
But in their case, they weren't even hackers, though. That was just poor customer service. But, you know, that's the thing. You can go to, like, and this is a great tool to use for a business. I use a website called Call8, K-A-L-L, the number 8.com, and you can set up a 800 number for $2 a month, and you can forward it to any phone number you want it to go to, and it will record the calls that come into it if you set it onto, like, a voicemail thing. I mean, and it's a great tool, and just like Facebook, it's a great thing, but when I start thinking about all the stuff you're telling me about, if I had no morals, what I could do with that technology and how much manipulation, I mean, you can even set that thing if somebody calls you based on the area code or prefix or state they're calling from to route to different numbers. So people from Florida would go to one place, people from Georgia to another. And, I mean, it's frightening what could be done.
There's an Android app out there. I can spoof your phone number.
Oh, really?
I can call your house, put in your cell phone number. Your wife would think it was you calling. And it would be me from my cell phone calling, making it look like it was your number.
You know, I get emails from people all the time when somebody's used their email address to send something out, like a spam or whatever. And all of the people always say the same thing. I don't know how, but my email address got hacked. And my thought is, your email address didn't get hacked. They just picked an email address. It happened to be yours.
Right.
And they sent it as you. I mean, a lot of ISPs will prevent you from using the server to send something out if it's not coming from, you know, your own email with your own password. But there's, if you have an illegitimate company, they'll let you send it as anybody. I mean, if you set up a server in Mumbai, you could send emails anywhere in the world as anybody you want them to be. I've even seen scripts that will do things like they take a list of 50,000 emails, they grab one email, and they send an email to 10 of the people on the list as that one. And then they grab the 11th one and they send it to another, and they keep doing that so that they never get traced back as the sender. They're just your email just happened to get used because you were the bait instead of the mark.
Right. Exactly. And you know, from a corporate standpoint, spam filters will catch a lot of that stuff, but you know, not everybody has that from a home use. Again, for companies listening out there, build a solid vulnerability management program. Patch your machines. Patch your machines. Get a penetration test done. You know, they're quote, ethical hackers out there, you know, I'm very familiar with them. I work with a lot of them. You hire them to come in and pretend they're a hacker and show you the problems before you get hacked by the bad guys.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a term in the SEO world called black hat. And SEO, of course, being search engine optimization. And black hat SEO is seen as kind of this dark and dirty world of the Viagra salesman or whatever. But the term, from my understanding, originally came from hackers that were just that. They were the black hat in the hacker world wasn't necessarily the guy trying to steal your ID in Romania. He was the guy that could actually was the elite hacker that could show you where your vulnerabilities are.
Well, there's black hat hackers, which are the bad guys, and there's white hat hackers, which are the security practitioners that are pretty much hackers that just are being a good guy. Then there's kind of some gray area there, like they're gray hat hackers where they're a security professional during the day, but they're a hacker at night.
That sounds exactly like SEO. You're black hat or white hat. Kind of gray, you know, but it's a different world there because you're not breaking laws in that world like these folks are here.
Sure, a penetration test is perfectly legal as long as you have the legal documentation behind it and your company is supporting you to do so. Now, they're not cheap, I'll tell you that up front.
Now, one of my big issues as a user with spam filters has always been the over-aggressive spam filter and things getting missed by clients and supervisors. When I used to have a job and had an actual boss, I had a job title at one company, and in my title was the word specialist. And the spam filter was so aggressive that it was filtering out that any email I sent with my title in it because specialist has the word Cialis buried inside it. And, you know, I had a boss that was pissed off, that was convinced I wasn't submitting reports, I wasn't ever emailing her, I wasn't doing it. And I'm like, you know, I don't know what's going on. And I called her over, but unfortunately it wasn't a remote situation, and I worked in the same office, and pulled up the sent file, and I have in my sent box, you know, itemized who I've sent to, and I'm like, there's 80 emails to you in the past 2 weeks. And they were all sitting in, you know, buried in with a billion spams on Viagra and Cialis and everything else. Because of that, and I think there's certain things that you guys can do to mitigate that. Like, if the email comes from inside the network and doesn't ever go outside the network, it necessarily doesn't really need to be spam filtered.
Right. Yeah. That's all the configuration there. I mean, I leave that up to your technical people. I mean, management can, you know, set the directive as far as how they want it set up, but those controls can get pretty technical as far as detection rates. And the good hackers know how to get by them anyway.
Is there anything that you could really say is a secure network?
One that's not plugged into the internet.
Okay. So as soon as we have a LAN connection,
yeah, pretty much
you have vulnerability. Period, and you have
the potential for it. There's risk there by connecting to the internet.
Sure. So it really does come down more than anything else to user behavior.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the biggest things. There's, you know, security is built of people, process, and technology. Okay, processes are in place. That's great. There's technology in place, but the people element, you know, that's where they're making the attacks these days. Bruce Schneier says, his quote, he's a worldwide, you know, security expert, and he says, amateurs hack systems, professionals hack people.
Mm.
The 15-year-old, yeah, can run a script from his parents' basement, but, you know, the professional hacker is going to pretend he's tech support and he needs to reset your password, or you need to tell him what your password is so he can fix something for you.
Or he's going to work your own network against you, emailing your friends, telling them it's you and you're stuck over somewhere and need some help and gain all kinds of personal information that way. It makes me think of like a detective, and the really sophisticated hacker is performing more like a detective doing an investigation than just a technology person spinning some script out of Romania or China or what have you.
Sure. I mean, social engineering is a big thing, just trying to get information out of people or get them to take some type of action.
Very cool. Well, hey, man, I appreciate you being with us today. I think you've given everybody a lot of things to think about, and especially I think your biggest advice is just don't give out any more information than you need to.
Exactly. Just it's all common sense. Just don't share it with people that don't need the information. Never be afraid to ask, why do you need this information? People are so fast to give away Social Security numbers these days. It's ridiculous.
And to me, that's once you have that number, you can do a lot of things with somebody. If you got a name, social, and home, a record, you can just literally go nuts with that information.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you think about it. I mean, say somebody labeled as their mother on Facebook, and their mother has their maiden name up there. Well, you're Facebook friends with them, now you know their mother's maiden name. You know, one of the other key pieces of information they need for identity theft.
Yeah, that's one that people I really don't think about. I don't really dig the family relationships thing on Facebook. That, to me, that should be something that could be run completely internally and only other family members. I have people doing genealogy and stuff like that. Excuse me, I understand that, but it just is a huge public side risk. Any final thoughts on things for folks today?
Don't click on things you shouldn't. If you don't know the person that sent it, or there's an attachment or a funny link, just don't click on it. Especially, you know, emails or Facebook. Look, it comes down to this. Your friend does not have a secret video of the Osama bin Laden killing, and your mom did not post a video of Casey Anthony's secret confession video.
Yeah.
Don't click on this stuff. Those attacks typically use topics that are hot in the media, like tsunamis and earthquakes and whatnot. Just common sense. Don't give up information you shouldn't, and common best practices. I'll get you a link to some good information for the show notes as well.
Well, hey, you know, Jim, I really appreciate you being with us here today. If you ever have anything hot you want to talk about, something that pops up that everybody needs to hear, let me know. We'll get you back on, or even if it's just a quick email letting us know about a threat that's popped up that I can put out on the blog or on the forum or Facebook or anywhere else, I'd be happy to do that. And again, I really appreciate you taking the time to come and talk about this important issue with us, because I do see there's a huge risk to people out there. And we talk about survival all the time, and part of that is doing things like staying out of debt. Well, it doesn't do you a lot of good to stay out of debt if some dude named Peggy in Romania racks up $70,000 in your name.
Exactly. You know, security is one of your top survival priorities. Well, protecting your information is as important as anything else.
Well, Jim, again, thank you for being on the show today. Today, folks, this has been Jack Spirico along with Jim Miller, helping you figure out how to live that better life if times get tough, or even if they don't.
Well, thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Survival Podcast Friday Flashbacks. If you enjoyed today's show, please consider becoming an MSB member. Just go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and click on members to learn more. You can also support our show by going to TSPAZ, that's T-S-P-A-Z, TSPAZ.com. Anytime you shop online, and while you'll support us no matter what you buy, you will find over 500 reviews of items I have personally tested and vouched for. And to stay in touch with us and never miss anything, follow our channel or our group on Telegram. You can find links to that and all our social media options. Just go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and check the show notes for any episode.